Mr. Waring, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. As Chris has probably told you, we're with the FCIC. I'm Chris Seifer, that's Al Crago, that's Claire Moraine. We have been tasked by the statute passed last year, the Fraud Enforcement and Recovery Act, to figure out the causes of the financial crisis. That statute tells us to look at any institution that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of exceptional government assistance. That's why we're looking at AIG. Statute also tells us to look at the regulation of those entities. That's why we're looking at the OTS, and that's why we wanted to talk to you, because we've been told that you were involved in the regulation of AIG, along with, as I'm sure you know, a bunch of other OTS people that maybe we've talked to. So that's primarily what I want to talk to you about, is your time at the OTS that involved AIG. But before we do that, as I've been asking everyone to do, can you just give me your, you know, where you graduated from college and what your work experience has been since? Just a quick rundown of that, so I have a context to know your background.
Sure. I graduated from college at the University of Northern Iowa. If you're a basketball fan, you saw where they just beat Kansas. If you're not, I can tell you a story, but we'll do that another time. I graduated in 1987. Started with the Federal Home Loan Bank shortly thereafter. It was a couple of months after. I've been a career Federal Home Loan Bank OTS employee since then.
Okay, and can you just give me the rundown of your FHLB / OTS career?
Be happy to. I started, as I mentioned, in 1987, July of 87. Was hired by the Federal Home Loan Bank of Des Moines at that time, the 8th District. I worked as an examiner there for roughly 3 years. Decided I needed a change in scenery, so decided to move to Greenville, South Carolina. I was an examiner in Greenville, South Carolina for a number of years, examiner 2, 3, 4, ultimately posted 4 and was accepted to a position of field manager. Responsibility as a field manager, I had a crew of between 8 and I think a high of maybe 15 examiners working for me, with responsibility for all of the institutions in North and South Carolina. Subsequent to that, in 2005, decided again, needed to change pace. At that point, I moved to Washington, D.C., accepted a position as a senior examiner with the Complex and International Organizations Group. That was in June of 2005. In May of 2006, I took the position of director of conglomerate ops. Following that, a number of things happened very quickly, but in February of 2008, I took a deputy regional director spot in Chicago. Spent about a 90-day detail there. At the time that I was there, this position as the assistant regional director in the southeast region of Atlanta, Georgia opened up. I accepted this position in March of 2008 and have been here since then.
Okay, so am I correct in assuming? Well, no, instead of asking if I'm correct in assuming, in what time period were you working on AIG?
I had some involvement with AIG from June of 2005 through January of 2008.
Okay, and if you can just give me your, take me generally through that time period and what your involvement was with AIG during that time.
More than anything else, it was developing a new program. The Complex and International Organizations Group was really not established as an entity previously. It was kind of in its formative stages, I would say, when I arrived. A lot of time was spent during my time at DC just trying to develop out kind of that framework for a comprehensive supervisory approach to the company. It was not only AIG, it also involved General Electric and Ameriprise, the other two conglomerates that we were directly involved with that supervision. The other thing that was going on at that time is we had regional staff that was tasked with actually performing the examination function. During that period of time, we decided that, again, this was this division or this undertaking was of such importance to OTS, really, that tasking of examiners should be moved to, those examiners should directly report into Washington, D.C. So we went through a number of transitions there, posted for the examiner in charge, the assistant examiner in charge assignments. We got the supervisory staff, the surveillance staff, the off-site monitoring staff in place. We tasked a program manager to each one of the institutions dedicated and built up that program. We developed a number of policies and procedures during the time I was there. We completed a number of examinations for AIG specifically. I know we completed two complete roll-up exams. We also completed, I would say, 12 to 15 targeted exams. Each one of those examinations ultimately came to me. I evaluated those examination reports, made the appropriate edits, and uploaded those to a system. I'm sure you have access to those reports at this point. Developing scopes of the various examinations and the targeted reviews that we did, I was involved directly in those. I did not necessarily conduct any on-site examination work, but my job description said I was certainly responsible for overseeing the on-site supervision and the on-site surveillance functions associated with the compliance. I don't know if that's responsive to your question or not.
It's very responsive, thank you. So, of course, my first quick question is, what's the AIG thing on the table?
I brought in the November 8, 2007 presidential mortgage presentation.
Okay.
Do we have that?
Pulled off their website. It's an investor disclosure.
Oh, ours. We do have that, yes. It's not an OTS document.
No, I just pulled it down off AIG's website.
Okay. So let me ask you some questions about that general description you gave me. When you come in and you're developing the new programs and the framework for the supervisory approach, can you give me a little bit more color on that? I mean, I don't know if Chris told you, I used to be an OTS examiner. Al's actually on detail from the FDIC, so you are talking to folks that have a general understanding of how regulation works. Is this doing the handbook section? Is it, you know, what are you doing to set up the CIO program?
Well, the whole, I think, concept of continuous supervision was somewhat new to OTS. So we spent some time trying to at least develop an understanding of the continuous supervision as employed by the OCC. I think you're correct. It was developing the handbook sections, trying to develop what we typically refer to as PPMs, policy and procedure manuals. We developed an entire kind of a policy manual during that point in time. But more than anything else, I think it was to develop how does the scoping process work? How do we execute these targeted examinations? How do we develop a risk assessment of the company? How do we roll these targeted reviews up into a consolidated roll-up annual examination report? What's our communication protocols, not only with the institution specifically, but with respect to myself and other constituents in the D.C. office? So it was really trying to develop the framework of that program.
Okay. And how did you guys, in terms of scoping the exams, whether it's the targeted review or the roll-up, how did you guys go about doing that? And specifically for AIG?
I think I can answer both at the same time.
Sure.
It started with we had had examiners on site, I believe, since 2003. So they had some basic understanding, I think, at that point of the institution. Following that, I think it was again through, I started in 2005 trying to develop what I considered to be a kind of a risk assessment of the company. That was based on, again, we kind of had to look at what we had for resources, which frankly were somewhat limited. What we had with respect to expertise, we had expertise, but in very few individuals. So we found early on that we were going to need to lever or at least utilize to some extent what we typically refer to as the corporate control centers within the organization itself. So we modeled our program at AIG to incorporate use of reports and work and attending meetings presented by the controller group, the treasury group, the global compliance group we were involved with. We spent a lot of time with the ERM, enterprise risk management function, that within that function housed credit, market risk, op risk. We utilized or met very frequently with internal audit staff, and to a lesser extent probably the global reinsurance group, as well as the casualty actuaries. By using those kind of those groups as the windows into the company, we were able to, I think, fairly quickly determine where their focal points were, what their concerns were, and then to some extent, not exclusively, but to some extent, accepted those concerns and those positions and those pressure points as our own, and gave us at least starting points to begin to drill down to the, within the company. Obviously, we knew that this was a company that was roughly 80% functionally regulated by state insurance supervisors and others. So we focused our effort on those non-regulated entities, primarily AIGFP, ILFC, International Lease Finance Corp, and American General Finance. We had a presence at AIGFP for a kind of an extended period of time. We developed at least a couple of targeted reviews specific to the activities of AIGFP, and then included the an analysis of AIGFP in the roll-up exams as well.
Okay. Now I understand, are you ever actually out at AIG as part of the regulatory process, or are you here in D.C. just dealing with the folks that are out in the field?
Yes. I spent most of my time in Washington, D.C. That being said, I made a concerted effort to try and attend significant meetings in the field. I at least got, I would say, on a monthly basis to 75 to AIG, the headquarters there, to try and interact with the examiners, to try and again understand or get some kind of feel, sense of what they were doing, what they were finding, what they were concluding. I did not participate directly in the examination process.
Okay. When you were helping out and scoping out the AIG exams, what were, I take it you're focusing on the 20% that's not regulated, right?
That was, again, we knew that those, because there was no functional regulator oversight of those entities, we felt that was more than anything else probably one of the roles we should have.
Okay, and then what within that 20%, what were the risk areas that you guys were focusing on, and was there like a written scoping memorandum for the targeted reviews and the roll-up exams?
There certainly was a scope memorandum. Again, this is, I think, it evolved over time. You should be able to find, right, and find more of your scope memorandums for the targeted examinations that were done later in the cycle. There should also be a scope memorandum for the last roll-up exam.
Okay, the last roll-up exam being the one that came out in 07?
Correct.
Okay. And then who was involved in preparing the scoping memorandum besides yourself?
The examiner in charge, the assistant examiner in charge. It would have also involved other examination staff. The program manager also would have had a hand in that. The scope memorandum was it certainly was a group effort. I don't think any one person had the panel.
Okay. And when you say, when you mention the titles, the examiner in charge was the guy named O'Rourke, I think, right?
Tom O'Rourke was the EIC for, I think, both of the roll-up exams. I take that back. He was the EIC at the last examination. Joe Gonzalez would have put together the initial roll-up examination.
Okay, and then Jim Christner was the assistant examiner, I think? that right?
Jim Christopher was one of the assistants. He was the gentleman that probably had the most experience with AIGFP.
Okay, and then who was the program manager?
Paul Bjornason was the program manager for most of that time.
And then?
Alex Look took over for a period. I believe Kevin Anderson was a program manager for a period of time. I would have to go back to be honest with you, when I was there, it was Paul.
Okay. I noticed you're looking at some documents. I assume the one is the roll-up exam from 07?
I do have actually the 07 roll-up exam. I also have, I printed off from ESAP, just a chronology of all the examinations that we did. It identifies the dates, the ratings, the who actually ran the examination, or who conducted the field visit.
Okay, so we have... You know, we've seen
the examination history reports. If you're interested,
We have it. So, do you recall from looking at that? When was the first time that the OTS was looking at the super senior CDS portfolio?
I think we probably, to some extent, looked at it from the first time we understood that it was there.
Do you know when that was?
I would guess we'd be paying. No, I don't.
Okay.
It certainly was mentioned and discussed in the 06 field visit. The targeted review that we conducted on 3606.
Okay.
There were no conclusions or assessments made during that target visit.
Okay. Yeah, we noticed, we've seen that, and there were no conclusions or safety and soundness assessments made during that review. Why was that, if you know?
At that point in time, we were still trying to develop an understanding of what FP was, how it interacted, what the counterparties were, what investment products it was involved with, how it structured those products. The 06, the 3606 memo or field visit, I think very clearly at the beginning of the report says that it was an effort to understand what FP was.
Okay. And then was the next one the... At least it looked at the super senior CDS, the April 23rd, 2007?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what was your role in that targeted field review?
My role, again, would have been to evaluate the examination when it came in. I had a number of conversations with the examiner in the course of that exam. Trying to get familiar with what he was finding, what his conclusions were. But again, I was not on site. It was more a supervisory capacity than it was in an examination capacity.
Okay. Do you, I don't have the, yes, I do. Do you have to sign off on the field reviews before they're deemed completed?
I don't know if I had to, but the report would have not been issued without my concurrence.
Okay. Now, you know, I don't think I've asked anyone this before. Are the targeted reviews sent to AIG?
We sent most of the targeted reviews, not all of them.
Okay. Are they? I mean, I know I don't have one in front of me, but are they usually addressed to them?
I can't tell you right now.
Okay.
I don't know.
So usually they're sent.
Our role all along was to provide the targeted reviews to the company, because in the roll-up examination we specifically say, you know, we reference those targeted reviews.
Mm-hmm.
They were written in such a way, they were always designed to be, and that was again something that came out of the development of this program, that we were going to develop targeted reviews and put them together in such a way that they could be transmitted to the institution. So I think in most cases you will find they were delivered.
Okay. In that April 07 targeted field review, I think it was reported, you know, that there was some prime mortgage exposure, you know, by virtue of their writing CDS on subprime CDOs. But I think it stated that you guys were going to put off until 2008 doing a more in-depth review of that exposure. I think it says that on page 9 of the field review. Do you recall that decision?
Specifically, no, but I did read it in the report.
Okay. Do you recall why that was put off until 2008?
You know, as I was going back and looking and trying to refresh my memory, I know that we had discussed the subprime exposure. We had discussed the concentrations in really the CDOs or the credit default swaps. We felt that the exposure to subprime at that point in time was well diversified, and the institution had appropriately managed that risk. You know, these credit default swaps, the level of subordinated credit protection on these was so substantial at that point in time that we really thought that the risk of loss was so remote that there were other things that it was just decided to put this up.
Okay. And who's...
In hindsight, a bad choice.
Right. And whose decision was that, or is it more than one person's decision?
I would say, again, it's probably the decision of the collective. You know, the examiners made the recommendation. You know, it came to me. I, in this case, accepted that recommendation. For me, it went to C.K. Lee. He accepted that recommendation. You know, I don't know if I could go back and actually find notes that, you know, we discussed this with Scott Albinson or Director Rich or Mr. Polikoff. I'm not sure if those conversations were had. Between CK, again, it would require me to speculate. I was not involved directly in any discussions.
Sure. Now, as we know now, you know, events sort of started to occur after this field visit. I think it concluded in July of 2007, and it's not long after that the first collateral calls come in. And we know that there's a December 5th conference call. There's the February 11th, 2008 8K saying PwC's found a material weakness in the process for valuing the CDS portfolio. And I think it says there's not a model, you know, to value these. Did you guys, I know they had a VAR.
So the model they were using was, if I remember right, the model that they were using at that time was the binomial expansion technique model. And we said that there were deficiencies within that model. I think our examination report notes that. It was a model that was adopted through or born out of the S&P work. You know, again, should it have been a different model? Absolutely. That's what we had. The other thing that we started to do in late 2007, we were talking about actually doing some model reviews of our own. We started that process. I was talking at that point in time to Tom Day and Scott Giardi and others within OTS. We had had a number of conversations with CK and others about how to get the technical expertise that we would have needed to go in and actually do a model review. We were not saying that we were going to validate those models, but certainly we needed to develop, as I think we knew in late 08 or 07 rather, that we needed to understand how they were valuing these models or how they were valuing these securities through the use of these models better than we had.
Now, they didn't have the binomial expansion technique model during the field visit that you guys did between April and July. That came later. They only had a VAR model, is our understanding, in terms of stress testing. And they had some other kind of model that I'm not too sure about, but from what we've seen in the timeline and the chronology is the BET model comes in later. And that's where I was going. When you guys were looking at the super senior CDS portfolio and noting that there is a subprime exposure, they didn't have a valuation model per se. They had a stress test model. And I was wondering if that, you know, created any concerns at the time.
My memory is is slightly different than what you're telling me. I'd have to go back and look.
Okay. Okay. I'm not sure I'm right.
It would have been a significant concern. As I remember it, they had a model. They actually had, at one point in time, two models. They had a redundant model that was being run by corporate. One of our concerns was that the corporate model had been substantially changed or scrapped. That redundant system gave us some level of comfort, frankly, that we had AIGFP running its own independent model, and then we had corporate running a kind of a backup test check. Again, a redundant system to kind of do that that benchmarking of the modeling that was being done at FP.
And how did the OTS gain comfort with either of those models?
That's what we were in the process of doing. We started that process in late, again, if memory serves, we really started trying to get that ball rolling in it would have been September, October probably of 07.
And was did that have anything to do with the fact that the collateral calls were coming in around then too? Was that like, oh, we better make sure we understand these models since all of a sudden there's collateral calls coming in?
Well, I certainly think we had a heightened sense of urgency to go ahead and get it done, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I take it, were the collateral calls a surprise to you or to the OTS?
They were a surprise to me.
And why was that?
Because all along I was under the impression that the risk of loss in these securities was so remote that a loss couldn't even be modeled to I remember them throwing out, to a 99.5% confidence level. They could not model losses in these particular securities given the level of credit enhancement.
Mm-hmm. Given the
level of subordination.
Sure. And given the fact that they were telling you that, you know, they couldn't model loss even at 99.5%, and then the collateral calls came in. Did you guys ever go back and look at those models that they were saying were producing those results and determine whether or not those models were reliable or not?
Yeah, I did not. Now, again, at this period in time is about when I went to Chicago. So I don't know if others... again, I left for Chicago in late February of 08.
Okay.
Between the time these collateral calls started and the time I went to Chicago, we had some discussions about doing some additional work on those models, but I know that we did not go in and actually do a review. We developed a model review program. We kind of developed what we wanted to look at, what we wanted to do, mm-hmm. but I don't think it was ever executed.
Now, when between the time of the July 07 ending of the targeted review, where the decision was made to put off the review of the super senior CDS portfolio until the next year, and the time you left in late February of 08, did the OTS go back in that time frame, given the collateral calls, to look at the super senior CDS portfolio? We haven't seen an exam on it or a targeted review on it.
Yeah, if, I would, again, it would require me to speculate. I just don't know. I am not aware of it.
Okay. Other folks we have talked to have talked about, what is it called? A peer panel for approving the roll-up exams. Were you involved in the peer panel?
I was.
Okay. And were you involved, given your timing, were you involved in the peer panel for AIG, I take it, in 06 and 07, June 06 and June 07?
I don't remember if we had the peer panel in 06. I would have to go back and double check. I definitely was in 07.
Okay, was there one, and I know there's not a roll-up exam in 08, so was the June 07 the last peer panel you would have been involved in?
Yes.
Okay. And I've had that described.
Your panels for the roll-up exams, just to clarify. It was only for the roll-ups, not the targeted. So sorry.
Right. And
okay.
So what describe for me the peer panel meeting in June of 07 for that roll-up exam.
It involved the EICs from the other conglomerates. It involved the entire CIO group in Washington, D.C. What we asked for was we got the examination, the draft examination report in advance. It gave us the opportunity to read that report to kind of develop a series of questions or areas where we had some concern with respect to the way the report was written or the conclusions that were reached within the examination report. The examiners came in and essentially presented the examination report, their findings to the panel. And then it was an interactive dialogue. You know, we would push back on the examiners would respond back to us. It was a very interactive, congenial, I might add, but very interactive, very spirited discussion, to try and make the report as absolutely accurate and the best product we could produce.
Okay. Now we know that that 2007 exam, they got a composite rating of 2, right, Al?
Yes, one for capital and two for risk management.
One for capital, two for risk management. Do you recall, was there disagreement at all internally at all on the ratings? I mean, ultimately there's a consensus because that's the ratings that go out, but was there disagreement during peer panel or otherwise?
Yeah, I don't think there was disagreement. There certainly was discussion about whether or not those ratings were correct. You know, I think at any time we're assigning ratings, whether it be with a conglomerate group or the institutions I'm working with at Florida, I think I always look at a recommended rating and say plus or minus one. I mean, if it's a 2 rating, why isn't it a 1? And why isn't it a 3? So those are always questions that I think reasonable minds will ask. And I think that's where that discussion was, is convince me this isn't a 3, or convince me this isn't a 2. But at the end of the day, I think we got to a place where everybody was comfortable with these ratings.
Okay. When you go to Chicago in February of 08, do you have any dealings with AIG after that point?
No, I pay attention to what was happening in the news, absolutely. But Alex Look had taken over as acting director at that point. It would have been a disservice to her to continue to interact with the exam teams.
Okay.
Mr. Waring, she takes over in March of 08, correct? As acting managing director or acting director of CIO?
I believe that's correct. I think I left for Chicago February, I'd have to back me my calendar, February 27th, something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
So if we, I mean, we have the exam report, so we can see what the OTS's, you know, ratings and concerns were in those documents. Are there other documents at OTS that would perhaps explain concerns that we're not seeing in the exam reports?
I guess I got to clarify or seek clarification what you mean by documents.
Whether it's internal OTS memorandum, emails,
yes.
You know, okay. And I guess what I'm getting at is, are there documents? Were there concerns within the OTS about AIG that are not contained in the exam reports?
Yeah, I think the concern that maybe resonated most with me it about the time some of this was happening, I think it was late 07, maybe even January 08, January, February 08, was the apparent stonewalling of some of the corporate control groups or blocking access to AIGFP, to some extent ILFC. That was particularly troublesome. We find that the controls and reporting processes and models and procedures all work very well in a non-stressed environment. I think at the time when these stresses began to present themselves, we immediately saw, and maybe immediate is maybe a stretch, but very quickly identified or presented with situations in which those controls and procedures, the risk oversight functions broke down. And frankly, the models didn't work either.
Okay. Who were the individuals at AIG, if any, that you were talking to during the 07-08 time period before you leave for Chicago?
Bob Lewis, the head of Enterprise Risk Management, he was on speed dial. Mr. Romer, the head of internal audit, was another one that I felt we had developed a good working relationship. I think we had, I think we shared a common goal to really identify areas or potential areas of weakness that could adversely impact the company. So I would say those were the two primaries, Bob Lewis again at ERM and Mr. Romer with internal audit. You know, we talked to others, Mr. McGinn, the credit risk manager, talked to him frequently. He was actually one of the individuals that expressed at one point, I'd have to go back and get the exact timeline, but that it was our understanding that he didn't have direct line of sight access to FP at the time when FP was experiencing these increased periods of stress.
Who were the Stonewallers?
The management team at FB.
Who's that, specifically?
I'll get his name wrong. Serrano is the name that comes to mind. I don't think that's right.
You mean Cassano? Joe Cassano?
Cassano. Thank you.
Okay. And can you give me some color on, you know, is the Stonewalling simply OTS is asking for information and not getting it?
It wasn't so much OTS was asking for information and not getting it. It was, I think we still, at that point, I don't think we were on site there. This was coming to us somewhat anecdotally from the management at AIG. It was also confirmed by or reported to us as a significant concern expressed by internal audit, by the external auditors, PwC.
Who at PwC is telling you that?
I would have to go back and get their names. I can't recall them.
Okay, the two individual, Bob Lewis, and I forget the internal audit guy's name you just
Romer.
Mentioned. Romer.
Romer.
Yeah, were they telling you that they were having trouble getting information from FP?
I seem to recall that Mr. Lewis, in one meeting, had discussed that briefly, but it sounded like the issues that he had been overcome by the time they were reported. I don't remember about Mr. Robert.
Okay. These issues of stonewalling, whether it's OTS asking for information or AIG corporate asking for information from FP, do you recall whether or not these are the subject of internal OTS email communications amongst you and others?
I'm sure it is. They should be in the emails.
Okay.
My understanding is those have been provided. Is that not correct?
They've been requested. I don't think they've been provided.
Brad, we're pulling the tapes for them. Yeah. It's stuff we got to go back.
Okay. The email traffic, I think we'll be doing this again if you have an opportunity to review the emails.
Okay. Thank you. So in terms of we've seen, I think. What was the general sense of you and OTS of their overall enterprise risk management before, you know, the collateral calls and the problems crop up?
You know, I think in general we would have said that I think the statements in the 07 report are probably, I think they're accurate.
Okay.
I mean, that we felt overall that the company was being run by a capable management team, that their overall risk management policies, procedures, and practices were acceptable. But we did have some concerns with respect to the way some of those risks rolled up to enterprise risk management, to the communication between some of the operating entities and the risk management function within the organization. So we felt that, again, it was an area that could be improved upon. To some extent, it was we had some antiquated infrastructure that needed to be addressed. They were working on that as well. You know, in the days of Hank Greenberg, I don't think they spent money on these types of things because it didn't generate a problem. You know, so I think there was some deferred maintenance, if you will, under his watch. So they had a lot of catching up to
do. Okay. So when the collateral calls come and the material weakness 8K comes out in February and you guys certainly by then realize that the risk management function is not as you thought it was before. What's the thinking at the OTS? And what I'm getting at is the thinking or the realization of, oops, we missed something, or was it something like these guys have been keeping stuff from us and so we weren't able to see what was really going on? Or just explain to me what the thinking was.
I don't think we immediately jumped to they've been keeping something from us. I don't think that was the conclusion at that point. I think it was more, you know, what happened at that point in time was almost, I want to say, so unprecedented that we felt maybe we were in that, you know, I said earlier, I think a 99.5% confidence level. I think we all of a sudden thought we were in that other 0.5. That this was a, you know, I think at that point we still had confidence in what we had been told. I think we had confidence in the conclusions that we had reached previously, that these securities, that the risk of loss was remote. You know, did we fully appreciate the liquidity component of these products? I don't think we did. Did we fully appreciate the impact that ratings downgrades could have on these particular instruments? I don't think we did. But, you know, to say at that point in time that we ran down the hall with our hair on fire, I don't think that's right either.
Right.
You know, I really think this was a short... I'm speaking for myself.
Sure.
I thought this was a short-term market dislocation that would very soon pass, and that things would normalize, things would return to what we had seen as a normal market, and it would be okay. I really thought this was a short-term blip.
Did the OTS look at the actual bases for the collateral calls from Goldman or any others and look at their marks and look at the bases for those marks?
Again, I think you're drifting into a period of time when I didn't have direct involvement.
This would have been in 07.
Yeah, we had examiners in there, and there were some collateral calls. I know Jim Krisner had spent some time looking at those. Again, I don't remember doing that work specifically.
Okay. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, Mr. Waring, was there ever any discussion at the OTS in the early part of 08 to go back and... focus on the subprime? I mean, I'm thinking, I guess it would have been right around the time that you may have left. I was thinking of the Bear Stearns incident and the market turmoil that was surrounding the March 2008 timeframe, particularly as it relates to any asset class that was backed by subprime or was subprime. Just curious.
You know, would we have done a targeted review? Is that the question?
Some discussion. Well, we know there wasn't a targeted review of that in 08, but at least was there any discussion about maybe, hey, you know, we should go back to this area, or what type of an action plan are we going to do to try to understand the underlying risk of that portfolio?
I was not involved in a discussion, but frankly, I'm not, and I will speculate here. Frankly, I can imagine that conversation was not had. Alex Look and C.K. Lee and Tom O'Rourke and Jim Prisner are frankly just way too sharp to let an opportunity like that pass by. I just can't imagine that the risk was staring them in the face, and they said, we'll do it later. If it happened, it happened in connection with the targeted review that was done earlier, where we had risks at that point that should have prompted maybe a different reaction, and we decided to put it off.
Okay,
but not in early OA.
Okay, and that you may have just answered the question I was going to ask, but before you leave in February of 08, are you involved, or do you recall any discussions about, hey, when we finished the targeted review in July, we said we'd put off the subprime CDO exam until 08. Given these collateral calls, we need to get in there now and get a hold of what's going on?
The one thing I didn't have an opportunity to do is pick up the last supervisory plan that was developed. Maybe you have that. No. I would assume again that, and I hate assuming, I know this would have been a focal point of the exam. Again, we didn't bury our head in the sand when things were going down the tube. It would have been a focal point of our reviews. Absolutely.
Okay, and when you say the supervisory plan, is that different than the scoping memorandum?
Yeah, we produced a supervisory plan that its intent was to set forth the examination work that we were going to do over the course of the next 12 months.
Over the next?
12 months.
Oh, 12 months, okay. And then the scoping memorandum would be more specific to either a targeted review or the exam?
Yeah, it's more specific. The supervisory plan is more of a broad-based document. It includes our risk assessment of the company.
And since that's...
It provides our discussions with board supervisors. It really is a plan of supervisory work over a 12-month period. Prospective 12-month period.
And since it's a prospective 12-month period document, is that document prepared at the same time each year? And at what time of year is that document prepared?
In the 30 to 60 days following the roll-up exam.
Okay, so July, August time frame, I guess.
Correct.
Okay.
You might have sent us one of those, Chris, in an email, and I'll look, but we'll want those for like 05, 06, 07 time period. Anything else?
I don't know if you'll find one for 05. Again, this was something that was developed. It was a concept that I think I had or that Alex had, that some of us had, that we needed a framework, some discipline around this process. And we decided that that discipline should be incorporated within a three-ring binder we call the supervisory binder.
Okay.
I think CK called it a dashboard, like a risk dashboard that was done in January.
The risk assessment. Seven,
but I don't remember seeing it.
The risk assessment is kind of a dashboard looking report.
Okay.
Lots of colors, not only the green, yellow, red, but you'll have more colors than.
But so the supervisory plan, the risk assessment, the dashboard, we're all talking about the same document here?
The risk assessment is part of the supervisory plan. It's really one of the driver documents.
Okay.
We have a separate manual for that. There's a separate standalone manual for the risk assessment.
Okay. I don't think, Val, do you have anything else?
No.
I don't have any other questions for you other than what I try to remember to ask everybody at the end, and that is, what else haven't I asked you that you think I should know about, or what else haven't you told me that I think you should know about AIG that you want us to know? I mean, like I told you in the beginning, our job is to figure out causes of the financial crisis and causes of institutions that failed or would have failed and looking at the regulation of it. What else do you want to tell me or feel that you should tell me about, you know, OTS regulation of AIG 1 or 2, what the heck, you know, got AIG in trouble?
You know, I don't know if there's anything else that we haven't covered. It's just I think this is one of those situations where, you know, we were on the front edge in some cases, I think, of determining where the maybe where the pressure points were within this company. I think we always had some skepticism or some maybe an unanswered curiosity of exactly what was going on at AIGFB. We were trying to understand not only that entity, but the way it interacted with its foreign counterparts, the way it interacted within the company, the way it was managed on a standalone basis. You know, we knew that there were weaknesses in those communications between corporate and FP. I think we would have gotten there had we had more time. I think we might have gotten there had we had more resources, frankly. Neither of which we were afforded. So, you know, was there over-reliance on information provided by AIG? You know, to the extent that we evaluated that information, we tried to get behind it, and we considered it valid. We acted on that information. We acted on the information provided by the rating agencies. You know, we took comfort in the reports coming from a lot of different places. We tried to, you know, cross-check that data to make sure there was some consistency, some directional consistency in approach. And I just sit here and marvel at the fact that to some extent everybody was wrong all at the same time. I didn't think it could happen, but it did in this case.
Okay. So what we will do is, as I tell everybody, you know, we'll go back over our notes. We may have some follow-up questions. And, of course, when we get more documents from the OTS, we may have some follow-up questions. But for now, we're done, and thank you very much for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. Like I said, you know where to find me. And don't hesitate. I'm sure you will have follow-up questions after you get a chance to handle the emails.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you.